Welcome to the Presentation Podcast. Join us from inside the design studios for conversations about presentation design, strategies, tips and tricks, running a design studio, and more. All for presentation designers, managers, and presenters. Here are your hosts, Troy Collar, Nolan Hames, and Sandra Johnson.
Hi, I'm Troy Collar from TLC Creative Services, based in Southern California, but this week in sunny Dallas, Texas, leading a team of six on-site presentation designers at a large conference.
Wow. Well, welcome to the Presentation Podcast. I'm Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz in Minneapolis, Minnesota.
And I'm Nolan Hames from Nolan Hames Creative, today coming to you from downtown Chicago, and it is beautiful outside.
Fantastic. Well, there is, obviously, we're all in great places and there's a lot happening. How about like a little summary of what's happening for business?
Well, you go first, Troy. What do you got? Because I want to hear about your team.
Tons of presentation design. I mean, like literally too much design going on. We have got everybody working at full capacity and it's great, but it's such a range of stuff. I mean, we got this incredibly detailed corporate template, 37 custom layouts, and the client is scrutinizing everything about them, like really, really scrutinizing, totally a project for InDesign Nolan, because things want to be so precise, it doesn't want to work. Awesome ultra-wide presentation, 5760 by 1080 was the pixel count, 85-foot wide screens. I mean, that was super great. We also did a ton of video work for that one. Which I'll also note was not totally planned as part of the project original specs, but it kind of turned into it. And then lots of medical, lots of pharma presentation makeovers. I mean, just hundreds and hundreds of slides. And interesting, they're both 16 by 9 and 4 by 3. Mm-hmm. So all over the place. And this week I don't want to use the corporate name, but they're a hospital administration group. It's their large national or annual. Well, they call it the national meeting. It's their annual meeting. And there's over 1,000 people here attending it. So the general sessions, which I'm running, are great. And then we have teams for each of the breakouts, which are basically full-size meetings in and of themselves. So, yeah, there's a lot going on. How about you, Nolan?
I'm in Chicago for training. I literally just got to the hotel room after an all-day training for one of my clients here. Went really good. And then tomorrow I'm off to San Francisco for a training on Thursday and then red eye back on Friday. So
yummy.
It's a big week. And in the middle we have project work left and right that we're managing. A lot of InDesign right now. And that's what's happening. How about
Excellent.
You, Sandy?
Well, I turned down a project for competitive reasons. I haven't done that, I don't think, since I've been in the presentation design world. We often would do that when I was at the ad agency. And I think that's because you become agency of record and there's this competitive nature. But I have been working for what would be considered the number two chemical management company in the country. And I really, really like working with them. And the number one approached me and I just to work on a template. So I probably wouldn't have had access to insider information, but I just felt I didn't want to compromise my original relationship. So I turned them down. And actually, I think I turned them over to Echo. Echo and Jules are going to work on it.
This wasn't violating any sort of non-compete contract you had in place.
No, not at all. It was a gut feel. I thought I had worked with that company, the number one, years and years ago. And now for the last year and a half, I've been working with their competitor and I really have enjoyed it. And I just didn't want to compromise that at all.
All right.
So it's an interesting. Yep.
Are you going to tell your client, your existing client?
Yeah, I am going to. I think they'll really, really appreciate it.
So you got the brownie points there.
Okay. They're a Midwest, you know, good guy company. But I'm working with John Wilson, you know, you go from Wisconsin to England. I'm working with John Wilson.
Same thing.
On a template. Yeah, exactly. On a template for a financial services company, which, you know, we'll be talking about some things with what good design and bad design. I've been working on this template where the client, I did not understand when they turned it over to me that it wasn't done design. So, yeah, I gave an estimate based on what I had received, the design I'd received. And since then, they've changed it, I don't know, 7 or 8 rounds. So, but busy with all kinds of other design work, too.
That's, I mean, everybody, exciting. Hopefully, everybody joining us, exciting. Things are busy. Presentation industry, this small little niche, keeps us all very busy.
We're so lucky.
I think we should preface this that we're going to talk about news and what's happening. This is kind of like a bigger segment because it's our first time. This is our first time talking since being back from Microsoft Presentation Summit. So,
all right. So let's talk about news. So this is a little bit old, but the Data Visualization Society is alive and out there and has been founded maybe 2 months ago or so, two, maybe 3 months at this point. It is a huge runaway success. I haven't checked, but last I saw a couple weeks ago, they were up to 4,000 members. And for now, it's free. They're trying to get their legs and trying to get sort of the whole data visualization community together. And it's everybody's been talking about it. And I think a lot of people have been connecting and are really thrilled with it. I know they're really exploiting Slack.
Exactly.
People are loving,
I think that's been
using
wonderful
Slack channels on it. Yeah. And it's good. I joined. Sandy, did you join?
I did.
And they have a very really nice logo that I just want to talk briefly about. That, you know, it's always nice when the best logos always come out of, there's a story behind them. There's always a reason for them to be produced, not just, oh, I like this color and this shape. And I wish I tweeted about it. I don't have the designer's name, the woman's name, but we'll put it in the notes because she wrote a nice blog post about it. But one of the members designed the logo, and it's essentially what she did was she took survey data from everybody who joined had to fill out a little survey about what type of data viz they, what type of work they do. And she dumped it all into radar charts that essentially created custom triangle shapes for each person, for each question. And then she overlaid the triangles. So everybody who joined has their own custom logo, custom Data Viz Society logo. And then she combined all of them and averaged them into the organization's logo as a whole. So it's a nice logo. And it's really just a beautiful story about how it was created through using member data and data in general. So it's a nice story. And again, she wrote up a nice little blog post about it.
I did not know that. That's awesome. You're talking about the like golden, green and purple triangles, right? That overlap.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's like these overlapping triangles that create a star shape. Yeah. It's really nice.
It's a beautiful logo to start. And then to have that story behind it. You said that.
Nolan. Yeah. It's so much wonderful. Nicer than just like a cute bar chart icon,
swish
type thing.
Swish,
exactly.
Another swish.
Nike swish. Yeah.
That's really cool. Hey, so that's a consequence of good design because they took some good data, they made a good design, and I'm going to kind of shift it and say on a related topic, because by the way, today's conversation is the consequences of good design, but the consequences of good podcast topics, like we're doing, production quality, and of course, talent, that'd be you two, means good podcast rankings. I get this email for us because I manage the podcast, but Podkit, which is this service that monitors podcasts, our podcast, the Presentation Podcast, is top 100 in 2 countries, which is, I think, the first time I've actually seen it. Like we're in the top 100. We are number 191 in the US, which is huge considering there are the number of podcasts produced here.
Podcasts in the US?
No. It gets, I'll define it.
Like, wait.
It gets better. We're number 25. We're listed in the top 25 in India. We're number 23.
Oh
Like, so a podcast consumed last week.
Wait, of all podcasts?
Now let's define it. There are huge silos. We're in the arts silo, which is massive. All right. And then there is a design category, which is massive. And they don't really have one for presentation. Like, that's as far as the generalized category siloing goes. So we're in arts, and design is our subcategory within it. So it actually is really good. Now, if we could actually just do presentation design, there'd only be, you know, 75 of us, and hey, we'd be the top 100 every time. Actually, there's, according to that other thing.
Arts design, yeah. I think that's good. I was worried you were going to say, like, we're number 23 in all presentation design podcasts hosted by three people, you know, in three different cities or something.
In North America. Yeah. So. I was pretty excited. The email came in. I was like, hey, check that out. We're actually moving up in the world. So good. You know, I'm going to go with it, the tie-in. It's a consequence of good.
They didn't ask you for money to be listed in the Who's Who book of podcasts.
Hey, should we jump back like a couple of weeks and talk about Seattle and Microsoft and what we can talk about?
Yeah, it's been about 3 weeks or so since the MVP summit. So we had a sort of a informal chat around the table. That was our last episode, but we didn't really discuss too much news that came out in that.
Well, let's just start with the big thing is the weather in Seattle was amazing. Like, nobody wanted to be inside. We're at Microsoft, surrounded by the project managers going, hey, can we go outside? It is like beautiful
it's
here.
Never, in all the years I've gone there, I've never experienced that weather.
Yeah. Oh, it's the first time I've ever landed in the plane, looked out the window and said, what are
Mount
those mountains?
Rainier.
Like, I didn't know there were mountains.
Oh, I have pictures of Mount Rainier from the plane window that are stellar. I've seen them. May I actually post one with this in the show notes. We'll see if I can pull it up. Anyways, the weather was great, but we should probably say there's also a little bit what we can't talk about because of the whole NDA.
We'll see. We'll just cut out what we can.
We'll keep each other on track.
We have a non-disclosure agreement as part of our MVP status. We do take it very seriously. But we do have some really cool things to talk about.
Well, we had 18 of the 33 approximately, right? 18 of the 33 PowerPoint MVPs in the world. Obviously, most of them were from the U.S., but we had people from Japan, Korea,
India,
Bulgaria, Canada. Mm-hmm.
Australia,
Minnesota. No. where else? Australia.
I'm thinking. You know, I need to bring up a photo. I had a great photo on the last.
You did.
Podcast. I took that one where we took right in front of the Microsoft sign. Yeah. Anyways, there was a lot of us there, and it was really, really cool. I mean, there's 1,600 people there, which is pretty amazing.
We had specific things that we can talk about. Icons.
Oh, that was big.
Yeah, huge. Now, I don't know what we can talk about except for this is such a little thing, but it's such a big deal. They're alphabetized, finally.
Yes.
You know, simple things.
Oh, this is the insert icons when you see it. Yeah, I was actually going to talk about the different icons, but yeah, let's go with the insert icons dialogue. The fact that it has categories on the left.
And they've added hundreds more icons. I don't know exactly how many, but...
Well, that was a good bad. They were very excited to announce how several hundred more. And I was like, you know, Noun Project is adding several thousand per day.
Yeah. I mean, look, it's never going to be enough. It's never going to be what the Noun Project is, but I think they're good additions. And I think, you know, for the average user, again, it's just more tools that are there and they'll keep adding to them. I think, you know, a lot of non-designers use Noun Project, as I discover from my training. So
I recommend it every single day. A client asks, how do you get access to icons? And at the price that it's offered, people are willing to, if their company won't cover it, they're willing to pay for it, a subscription.
Just jump in while we're on icons. There, for most people, hopefully, you know, some people may know that there is a Noun Project add-in for PowerPoint that allows you. So you can use Microsoft's icons, but you can also get this little add-in to search the entire Noun Project icon library from within PowerPoint and insert things. Now, when you use that tool, you get PNG icons. But there is a newish, I didn't know about it, but this is something I learned about. There's something called Script Lab which is like a coding thing that you need to activate it in PowerPoint. It's under the tab, and it allows you to write. It basically, I think it's a helper to help you write code and add-ins for PowerPoint. So that's as much as I'm going to say specifically about that, because I'm not a coder. But one thing that we learned with that is, and there's an example of it in ScriptLab, you can now insert SVG objects. So basically, you can write an add-in for PowerPoint that the API has been opened up to insert SVGs. So bringing this back to Noun Project, that means, everyone, that
Noun Project could, right?
Could, we hope, one day allow you to insert their SVGs. That would be ideal. So
Nolan, we are so in sync. When I started, that's what I was going to ask. Like, hey, are we allowed to talk about that new API thing?
Yes.
I'm very excited.
It exists.
So
I played around with it. I mean, I don't.
Well, the ScriptLab thing, I mean, I play with it too. But so here's my summary, everybody. You couldn't actually use an add-in that inserted an SVG because it wasn't actually code options within Microsoft Office. They've expanded it to say, hey, we now recognize SVGs, make an add-in that'll let you insert SVGs. And a lot of that's because the insert icons, PowerPoint one that we started with, they needed a way to insert their own SVGs. So they kind of open up the coding. I'm really hoping other companies like Noun Project, Adobe Stock takes advantage of it and builds their add-ins to recognize it. Because nothing more frustrating than Noun Project right now. You go find the image right in PowerPoint. You open up the little side pane, you search for it, and it'll insert a ping image. You got to go to the website to actually get the SVG. It's just...
So Noun Project, if you're listening, get working on that.
Yep. So, and actually, Sandy, when you said icons, I immediately went to, hey, we announced this and action was taken. It's just coincidental. It's also the fact that Microsoft's actually doing things. We really complained. I mean, I really complained about the paste icons. Remember when you paste in and the icons were kind of recreated? They're very simplified. They're their new aesthetic. Well, they actually took away the little link icon part of the icon. So it kind of lost the meaning. I think we talked about this two, maybe three episodes ago. Well, we're at Microsoft, completely unbeknownst to me anyways. They said, hey, we've been listening. We see things. We've redesigned these icons, and they do have a new paste set of icons. I don't think I see them in my build of PowerPoint, but I should have actually looked at this more closely. I didn't know we were going to talk about it. But anyways, it has the little link icon in there. It's kind of funny. They have some other things there, but here was a soundbite it did. The design team, Microsoft's team, they're updating icons across all of Office, and there are over 4,000 icons. So they're not designed by app experts. They're designed by a team of designers who were said, here, we need to recreate all these icons. So now I kind of get it. They're not really investing time in the feedback. Like, hey, did I actually just break what this thing's for? But they heard, they updated. My phone is ringing here at the office.
They're calling right now.
So that's actually where I first went with the icons, and then the insert icons thing, that whole new dialogue. And I think it's going to get better. Some of the stuff they talked about is pretty cool. The ScriptLab ability is very cool. What else? There were so many things.
I think I must've been out of the room when you talked about paste icons, because what you're telling me right now is all news to me. So that's really, really
cool. Oh, really?
Yeah.
I
must've missed that. When they came out with 3D models, what is it? 2 years ago now, a year and a half. Last summit, I know, Troy, you and I were both very, we provided a lot of feedback.
Excited, but uncertain how to deal with things. Yeah.
Well, yeah, because my clients are not going to use dinosaurs and planets in their presentations. I'm sorry. And so my big concern was that none of the 3D models that PowerPoint allows none of the 3D models PowerPoint, what's the word? Accepts. None
recognizes. Oh, I know where you're going.
My clients don't create those. My clients don't have those. So about 6 months ago, Microsoft reached out to me and said, you know, remember that client that you had? I had actually two of them. But anyway, we were able to work out something with my client who happened to be in the middle of a conference, wanted to use 3D models. Microsoft literally converted files for the designer I was working with and sent them back to him, and then gave him some how-to steps to do that in the meantime. However, what they released while we were at Summit is this awesome, massively comprehensive tutorial on everything 3D for PowerPoint as it relates to PowerPoint. So we'll put a link to that in the notes, and I encourage anyone to access it. I sent it directly to my client. He was pretty grateful.
It's yeah. Have you read through it, Nolan?
I have. It's very technical, and a lot of it just doesn't apply. I mean, I'm not making 3D objects, and right. a lot of it, I had no idea what a lot of it meant. But yes, if you create 3D stuff, if you work with those programs, you will understand, and it will be very important.
And it's the conversion part.
The whole upfront part, Sandy, I thought was really impressive. In fact, they basically have a history, not a history. They have like, here's 3D 101. They basically have this summary of what 3D models are, where they're used, what they're doing. And then they kind of focus on 3 to 4 programs. So I was hoping for just like a spec sheet. Mm-hmm. If you do these things in your export, in your design, in your export, they're guaranteed to work with Office. That's kind of what
I have that if you want
to. Yeah, well, it's all encompassed in there now. I think it's made a little more long form. But then they did this whole big introduction to basically give people a really, really good understanding of 3D models. So I've already handed this off to our 3D modeler and said, well, I've handed it off with like 5 models. I'm like, hey, here's 2 past projects. Here's 2 new ones I want to work on. Make sure you can export 3D models that'll work in Office, because mm-hmm. there's a lot of limitations. Office is doing a lot of great stuff, but they can't encompass everything. 3D programs are far more advanced than Microsoft Office can actually handle. So there's a lot of limitations. And if you know what those limitations are, you can work within it. But figuring out those limitations is very frustrating. So we've actually walked away from 3D modeling and just gone right back to exporting Ping images or movies of 3D models, because we couldn't figure out how to take the complex model to be Office compatible. I'm pretty excited. There's documentation out there. And what I thought was pretty cool, it's actually distributed as a PowerPoint file, because there's live 3D models in there. Mm-hmm. So you can actually see the effects and, you know, design and parameters. And I was really excited about this thing. I think it's a huge step forward.
They listened. That's what at first the response when I guess you could say I complained. I expressed my concern. The response was, well, this is the way it is. And then all of a sudden it was a 180, and they're being very helpful and trying to solve the problem for us. That's the first time I've ever seen Microsoft reach out to me and help me solve a problem for my client. It was great.
That's very cool. Other things? I know we have a topic, but there's so many cool things.
Live transcription, translation. This has been, I think we talked about this before, and this has been out for a few months at this point. But the cool thing was to see every speaker make use of it. This was the first time I really saw it as an audience member, so widely used. So not only initially we started using it as just live transcription to just basically show English subtitles, but then we had a couple of foreign MVPs, including somebody from Japan. So we started speakers started using the Japanese translation for them. And it was just very cool. Like at the top of the screen, no matter what you say, it gets translated sort of instantly. Not always instantly.
It was cool. And we also did it the opposite. When Mihu was up there to present. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It translated to English for us.
The other way. Exactly. She spoke in Japanese at one point. So it is it's a first generation feature, but it's incredibly promising, and it's just amazing to add. You just talk, and I mean, no other software is needed. All you need is PowerPoint and an internet connection, and it just starts giving you subtitles or super titles.
Super titles.
That's what they call when they're on top.
Is it really?
It is. Yeah.
Makes sense.
Wow. I just learned something new. So I'll change gears off of the summit, because we had some really cool stuff announced just within the past few weeks. And I want to kind of give a little recognition to Mac Keynote, Mac Keynote 9 and the latest updates. They actually sent out a nice little, hey, what's new? Do you guys see this thing? The three.
I did. I haven't played with it, but I saw the update.
And my take on Mac Keynote is it came out fantastic, like a dozen years ago, and it really hasn't progressed much in a lot of capabilities. It's gotten some other collaboration and other things, and a few tools have been removed, but you can make animated GIFs, kind of cool. not those other things. This one's cool though. The sync shapes, save custom shapes for use in other presentations across any of your devices. Now, I don't actually know if that means I could design shapes and then give them to you, Nolan or Sandy, to make use of, but it's like you can create this custom library, which is really cool.
That's nice.
They have a much simpler whole theming process, and now they're letting you sync those again using iCloud. They're making that use of it. But so for me, the biggest improvement is something that most everybody's going to, no one's going to recognize it, but I have been so frustrated by this. I am so excited. If you have a presentation that is a ultra wide, something wider than 16 by 9, if you looked at the thumbnail view or the little action pane left-hand side view, all it did was show you the center 16 by 9 cut. So you could never actually see your whole slide as a thumbnail. Now, PowerPoint has always supported this, which is amazing and fantastic. And the reason I go to PowerPoint for these type of shows always, but Keynote made their thumbnails better. You can now see like a whole custom width. So if you have like this big 4:1 super wide aspect ratio, the thumbnails show up. It is so cool.
Nice.
I guess I should preface that, you know, Keynote finally caught up with PowerPoint after 11 years, but it's there. It's a big improvement.
Well, this isn't as fancy, but, you know, I think the three of us all use Staget, right, as our screen capture tool and edit, you know, some editing abilities. I often recommend the Windows snipping tool for users who can't buy software. It comes with Windows and it's very, very basic screen capture type of capabilities. Well, it has now been upgraded. It's a little bit more robust. It's still not Snagit, but it has been updated to now be Snip and Sketch. So for Windows users, they can
Very cool.
Capture that.
Well, my last bit of news, I think we can wrap up with the news is that Australia makes great wines, and Virginia and New Jersey and Minnesota. Indiana and Ohio does not. So we took an evening and I arranged, since we were having MVPs from all over the country and all over the world, I hosted and organized a blind wine tasting. Everybody brought a red wine from somewhere from their region, and we did a blind tasting. We had 12 wines, I think.
13.
And yeah, Australia came out on top. We had a couple from Australia, and my New Jersey came in, I think, maybe about 8 or 9. And Virginia, sad to say, came in dead last. Sorry, Mike.
But hey, my local wine, local Southern California, yes. Temecula, took third. I had a nice petite Syrah. I was very excited. And that isn't even actually my favorite wine out of our local wineries, but it was the one I had available to bring with me. So yeah, hey, Nolan, no, seriously, that was one. It was a great event because we all had fun with it. But I mean, Nolan showed up, Sandy. Were you just blown away? Not only was it a, hey, we're going to have a wine tasting, Nolan had like opaque bags for all the wines to go into. So everybody has the same wine bag. And then he had a full grading scale. Like, you know, it says the PowerPoint is the Microsoft MVP logo at the top and the first annual regional wine. I mean, this thing was professionally set up. There was a lot of effort
around when it comes to wine.
It was good. It was really good. So Sandy, I used to like kind of tell people like, hey, you know, I got a couple of wine refrigerators, you know, wine coolers, you know, this kind of do a little, went to Nolan's house. I just be quiet now. Nolan has a walk-in one that is his children, his wife and the dog could get lost into.
I love it. That's great.
That is a good note to end on because it was definitely a highlight of the whole trip. And I really look forward to the second annual for certain, Nolan.
All right. We'll figure out the theme next time. We'll do a good thing.
Okay, here we go. Consequences, by definition, quote, a result or effect of an action. Presentation design has consequences. Everyone knows, again, quotes, death by PowerPoint, the mantra, which just kind of perpetuated itself into, well, almost stardom. It's really not about PowerPoint, my personal opinion here. It's about bad information flow in any design, in any program, any printed material. It is a consequence of bad presentation design, which is what death by PowerPoint is really talking about. So Nolan, Sandy, and myself, we formulated this conversation into three vantage points. What are the consequences of good design for designer to the client, for a designer to a designer, and of course, for the client to the audience? So let's talk about the consequences of good design.
Yeah, I think, so when we're talking about good design, we're really not talking about, is it pretty? Is it aesthetic? And I think your intro there, Troy, was good, that good design actually accomplishes much more. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I think the biggest thing, especially in our world of design, presentation design, communication design, is that it conveys a message better, faster, more clearly, more memorably, right? I mean, that's mm-hmm. that's essentially what we do for a living. That's right. That's exactly what we get paid for.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, clients, like our design clients, they may not always know the impact of good design when they have it, because they're already coming to a designer and they're saying, hey, could you help me out with this and that? They know it's important, but they don't really know how much of an impact. But here's the thing. When someone does not have good design, I hope they know what they're missing. I mean, that's the audiences that grow and they're like, oh my gosh, can you believe this? This is, my eyes hurt. So
before we sort of jump into our three categories, and the first one is going to be designer to client. So us to our clients, the consequences of good design. Do we want to just talk a bit more about sort of, again, this messaging? Sandy, you had something about, you want to talk about the science of it a little bit?
I do. And I think what really moved me from slide jockey 20 years ago to a presentation consultant and a designer and a storyteller was helping my clients understand the science. And we've had complete podcasts on the science of presentation. That alone, by speaking in terms of science and not what makes a slide pretty, is what allowed me to deliver good design to my clients. They were willing to, when I gave them stats about what makes people remember a slide, you know, stats from Tufte, Mayer, Carmen Simon, they'd go, oh, okay, I can't argue with stats. And by consequence of understanding and applying science, we ended up with great design.
I think that's great. And I'm gonna finish this intro off with a quote from Scott Baronato, which I think I've said before, but it's fresh in my mind because I just got through with an all-day training, which I talk about this quote. So Scott Baronato wrote a great book called Good Charts. I hope that's the name of it. I'm blank on that. About a year or two ago. And he talks about this concept of, you know, not designing charts to be pretty in and of itself. And he said, and the quote is, a chart is not good because it's pretty. It's pretty because it's a good chart.
Yes.
So it's eschewing. It's that outside in approach. So good design is not just pretty. You see like a great logo. It's not good. Like we were talking about the DataViz logo, mm-hmm. Society logo. It's not good because it's pretty. It's good and it's pretty because it was well designed. And it was really thought out. And I think that's really the key. It's not just an outside in aesthetic thing, good design. So let's talk about the sort of our first thing, designer to client. What are the consequences of a good design from going from us to the client? How does this client benefit?
Let's start with the basics, which is why is PowerPoint or Keynote, like why are they so popular? And that's because of repurposing. Yeah. I mean, the ability to easily take content from one presentation and use it in another presentation, clients, again, designer to client, the client benefits from that good design in their keynote address that was designed for them. They can leverage pieces of that and put it into other future presentations. I say that because when we used to do things so well, Flash and InDesign and, you know, a lot more complex programs, end users have a harder time lifting and making reuse of that content. PowerPoint makes it incredibly easy. It encourages it. And I think it's one of the benefits of using PowerPoint in that respect. So designer to client, the client gets to benefit by making use of those professionally designed elements. You guys agree?
I would add the word editability. I always say that that's the one of the huge advantages to PowerPoint and Keynote and other slideware is that you can edit it. A non-designer, I should put it, put it that way, should edit it. You know, and that's a difference, a big difference from print generally, from video, and even web design. You know, maybe with the exception of some well-designed CMS systems. Another designer hands off their video project and the client's like, all right, I guess this is what it is. Yeah. But we hand off a presentation and they, for better and worse, may be able to edit it and repurpose it and just own it, I think, a little bit more and instead of it being sort of this lockdown thing.
Exactly.
Ooh, can I throw a promo in right here?
Sure.
So on the design side, that ability to steal is it's great. On the technical side, PowerPoint makes it so, so easy. But here's the thing, sneak peek, promo, the presentation summit later this year. One of my sessions is entitled Really Big, and I'm revealing best practices for designing presentations for huge canvases, but designing them with the end client in mind. And literally a whole section of it is file setup for everyone to be able to lift that content easily from these massive, 3-to-1, 4-to-1, super long strip presentations and add them into their standard 16x9 presentations.
I guess similar to that, the big picture on designer to client is our client's benefit. In many of the overlooked and often their time sucks, just transferring something from ultra wide to 16:9 to 4:3. Their time sucks of a presentation content formatting. So the better we can design to help our clients and ourselves, I guess, other designers, less time remaking the wheel, futzing around with design, employees are able to do their real work, right? They get to get their job done. They're not spending time on presentations.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Non-designers really shouldn't be wasting too much time designing. And that's where a well-designed template with layouts and, an icon library, for example, comes in. So, when we do templates, we try to give clients icon libraries so they don't have to waste time on Noun Project and, searching things down. It's just there. They shouldn't have to waste time reinventing the wheel, as you said, creating a new design when it's just part of the boilerplate or it's a layout they can just click. And that's best case scenario, obviously, we're not going to take away all their, we're not going to completely automate it for them, but that's the difference between I think we see that all the time, a well-designed template by a designer that knows what they're doing results in our end clients being able to do the work they're really being paid for and not having to struggle in creating presentations.
Exactly.
Okay. So I'm going to take a tangent. And I'm going to vent at the same time, make a point. Current project going on right now, maybe for like the last 6 weeks for a 2-week long project. Side note, inventing. Client wanted tables in a certain styling. I mean, they wanted to specify the colors. They wanted to specify the tints. They wanted to specify the fonts, the sizing. Beautiful table. I mean, it is a really, really well done. It might not have been the client. It might have been their outside agency that's doing a rebrand for them that spec'd it all. Not that I'm bitter against agencies not knowing what they're talking about, but this one was making bad decisions because what we're talking about is a good template. Yes, we could easily create a template and specify all those steps. It was 32 steps to make a table fit the design parameters. And we had to go round and round and round, basically explain, there are some limitations of working within Microsoft products or any type of products, and tables are definitely one of them. Charts was a whole nother battle, but I'll just stick with tables. We said, let's move the tint to here. It's within the color scheme. Let's leverage the presets that Microsoft gives us. I mean, we made a well-designed template and we just got feedback. They're like, oh, this is so great. Everybody's making tables consistent. Thank you for making this work for us. It's like, yeah, we could have gone with what was said, but that wouldn't have been good design. That would have been a downfall for, again, we're designer to client. This was all of the clients in a whole corporation that would have been just miserable trying to design visually set up the tables. And basically, like you're saying, Sandy, huge time suck. I mean, we have it set. It's 6 clicks to make any table fit the styling. Content aside, it was 32 clicks to make it fit their needs. So anyways, good design.
It would not have ever been implemented.
It was failure waiting to happen. Exactly. I mean, it was inevitable.
Exactly.
Next topic.
Troy, you brought up designers, other designers. Let's talk about when we create work that we know we're handing off to another designer, someone that might be finishing up a project for us or in-house managing the presentation design or any file consistently or with consistent design moving forward. Any thoughts on that, you guys?
Yeah. So I think this one might be a little harder to quantify, but we've all had to create, you know, more content for a presentation that someone else has started. And if it has a strong, consistent design, I'm not talking necessarily about like technical setup, but if it has a strong, consistent design, it becomes easier to follow. You know, but if the design is all over the place, you find yourself struggling not only to come up with new designs, but also just try to bring the overall design together, which is not always possible at that point.
I guess I need to unmute my mic so you can hear me. Totally started that with it muted. I'm not sure we really thought about this when outlining the conversation, but we really should say what we started on there is a good PowerPoint template is good design. To Nolan's point about good PowerPoint template, a full-featured InDesign template or a full-featured Adobe, like a master file, each with presets configured to make the design more aligned across multiple pieces and by multiple designers is huge. So this isn't just limited to PowerPoint. I mean, like in InDesign, paragraph and character styles. Right. Nolan, how many times do you like praise somebody that has them preset and like kind of get upset with the person that just kind of like randomly, well, not randomly, they applied them, but manually throughout a document? You're like, oh, this is so much work.
My God, I can't. I remember working with one template, InDesign template that was provided to me. Somebody had set up all their, this is a good thing, but whoever the designer was set up their pull quotes with just an amazing paragraph style. And literally all you have to do is go click and boom, like you get these amazing pull quotes, like design.
Yes. And
made my life so easy. It's just like whip through this thing. So properly set up. Yeah. So that's again, a more technical thing. Obviously, but yes.
Yeah. So the technical sides, I mean, you could run that, you know, text placeholders in PowerPoint just being set up well and the custom ones done or the PowerPoint template color scheme actually working or an Illustrator. My favorite is actually having preset color swatches instead of having to go eyedropper and figure everything out on your own is just huge. So designer interaction with good design, it can be amazing. And if not paid attention to when doing the technical setup, it's amazingly frustrating. So, and, you know, just picking up. So I'm actually working on a project right now. It's a very rushed little presentation request. It's for financials for one of our, it's a cosmetics company and they have beautiful design and they have whole, you know, multiple, I think we have more art directors than designers at the company. So, I mean, the stuff we work on, but this is like, hey, we have like 20 pages of financials that we need to kind of make look like our brand. You know what? It's not that hard of a project because there is such a strong design umbrella to work within. In addition, the PowerPoint files, we created the templates. So naturally they're wonderful, but you know, we already have color schemes and we have stylings. And so this kind of tedious, boring content is coming together really fast, which is good. It's like a 48-hour project. So anyways, I think that's all important. What about, do we want to hammer on this like proper layout and master slide? And I mean, we can go more into the technical stuff
I think that's clear. I mean, you've got to have the technical setup because as you hand things off, it just, you can't hack it. Like I've been interviewing some designers and what I would always say is if you're trying to figure out something specifically in InDesign or PowerPoint and you figure out a hack to do it, that may not be a good thing because I said, ask me first, because if there's a proper way to do it, we want to do it the proper way. Mm-hmm. So it's easier down the road. I think we've all seen, you know, hacks. Sometimes hacks are great, but if you're hacking something that actually has a built-in feature in which you can do it correctly, that's not good.
Absolutely. Totally agreeing with that. And by the way, it's just easier for me to talk about the technical aspects because design is, I mean, there's principles of design and then everybody's idea of what is good design. Technical aspects are easier to talk about. I mean, we could talk about like just file naming, because I'm having a problem with an internal client that took our file naming nomenclature and it's now like 19 words that no joke end with the word final. How can it be final? It's their final review. Oh, it's horrible. And yeah. So anyways,
I'll say sometimes if we're talking about like file naming and things like that, sometimes the designer to designer is the same designer. And by that, I mean, and maybe we've all done this, I've reopened files from years ago, or honestly, it could even be a month or two past, and I haven't quite figured out what I did. It's taken me longer to figure out. And this, like, especially with Photoshop layers, like you open up a file and you're like, oh boy, how did I get that effect? And a lot of times it's because I'm lazy and I'm not using one of my favorite features in Photoshop that not a lot of people know about, which is layer comps. You guys know about
layer amazing comps? They're awesome.
And what they are, I'm amazed at how many designers don't know what layer comps are. So if you have, you know, hundreds of layers and effects and various things applied to those layers, once you get it perfectly, just go to layer comps and say save this layout, and you can say, you know, save is version one, and you type it in, and then you get this whole list of them, and then you can just toggle back and click it, and it automatically puts the layers back to where they should be. And it'll even move things in space. So instead of having, like, if you have a logo and you want to try it over on the left, and then the next time you want to try it on the right, you don't need two different layers for that. You just need two different layer comps, and it'll move it for you. So it actually reduces the number of layers you actually need if you use them. And then there are the times where I get lazy and I don't, and I'm like, how did I have this before?
So going back to what we just said, Nolan, so, you know, I'm really big on naming your layers, so I'm not blindly clicking around, guessing at which layer to work on. Yeah. And just like you're saying, I could be the same designer. It could have been a designer set it up, and then they're going to open this file back up 2 weeks or 2 months later, and they don't remember what's what. So now they're blindly clicking around. I love layer names. They give you a clue. I love folders. Layer comps, I'm going to assume that you can take it from great to fantastic by actually naming your comps and not the generic layer comp one, layer comp two. I've seen it.
Yeah. Another cool thing with layer comps is you can do a script where you export. So let's say you have, you know, you've done five different versions of a layout and you want to send them all to the client. You go to export layer comps to PDF and it'll instantly make them all. So you don't have to go clicking on and off yourself.
Wait, I don't think I know that.
Yeah, it's I don't know exactly where it is. It might be under file or export scripts or something. It's called layer comps to files, and you can export it as a PDF or individual PNGs. And
oh my gosh, this is like when you discover an Illustrator, you can export all artboards as individual files.
Oh, I learned that one last month. Thank you, Julie Turberg. That was amazing.
Oh, I gotta go look. Okay, make a mistake.
No, not individual artboards, individual items.
Elements. Yes, I'm sorry. Yeah. You can do artboards as well. We do that.
Well, I know you guys are talking about PSD files, but you, of course, I'm hoping that most of our listeners know that you can do this with PowerPoint too, sort of. You know, I name layers, objects, whatever, all the time, especially if I'm animating and especially if I'm turning it over to somebody else and I know I'm going to have to train them how to do something in the future on it. So I know it's different, but if there's a selection pane in PowerPoint, and if you can be naming your objects instead of oval one, oval two, and you can name your groups. It's kind of like naming layers.
It's totally layer. I've got a few limitations to it, like the expand all and collapse all doesn't exist, but right. Use the layering all the time. I just used it today. I was given this map. It was a vector map in PowerPoint, I should say. And I quickly grouped all the data points together so I could basically turn the layer off and I could work on the map coloration without clicking right. Or moving around. Yeah, it's a huge thing and absolutely needed. Nolan, wrap us up. Designer. Let's finish this one off and go to the next one.
I mean, I think at the most granular level, it's just simply about just designing in such a way that others can easily pick up where we left off. I think that's the biggest thing.
Agreed.
Absolutely.
All right.
We started with designer to the client. I think that's the most obvious connection. Like, we're going to give things to a client and they get good design. I think designer is often very common. And, you know, for me, that's really common because we're a design team and we're handing off projects left and right. One of our designers was in for jury duty, had a wonderful, exciting day, I'm sure, of sitting around in a room doing nothing. But, you know, I and a couple other designers took over the projects. Hey, it all made sense. It was designer. We're within the same company, but that happens. But the one that I don't think gets a lot of attention is our final topic, and that's why we kind of said it here, is client to audience. Your client now has this amazing design, and there are some consequences for them of taking and presenting good visual data, good visual design.
Yeah. So I think the takeaway here is that good design leads to the client's message to their stakeholders being clear. So they win business, they thank us, they pay us, it's sort of a win-win there. But, you know, not every presentation is designed to win business, right?
Right.
But the best ones are designed for the audience to take some sort of action or to move them to a new place of thinking or understanding. My whole funnel of my one of my explanations of presentation is the funnel model, where you've got R&D and training and infrastructure for organizations, and they spend all this money on labor and training and technology and all this kind of stuff and product development. But then at some point, all that stuff has to get funneled through this narrow funnel of presentation to sell it to a client, to get FDA approval, or to, you know, pitch the company to win the agency business or whatever. Mm-hmm. So at some point it has to get, you know, presented to somebody else. And that's usually where they spend the least amount of money and the least amount of energy. But it can all go sideways at that point and can all fail.
Awesome point.
It is an awesome point. And I, having come from an ad agency world, and at the time having a $40 million ad budget was big. That I always was in awe of how much money they'd spend on that level of advertising and then allow their salespeople to walk in with something that was created by themselves. So
yeah, it's actually horrifying.
It is horrifying. So
yeah. If it's a startup, you're trying to get your company off the ground. Like, you spend all this time developing your, you know, product, and then, all right, we'll go in and ask the money guys with a crappy presentation.
Right.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, and so to your point about it's not always to win business, when I talk to my clients about what their presentation has to do, I always use two words. It's connect and compel. Your presentation has to connect with the audience and compel them to some desired outcome. So again, to your point, if the story, the flow, slide design, and the presenter are able to connect with the audience at some emotional level, and I don't mean cry, you know, I'm emotion, it's connect with, the presenter can then be successful at compelling the audience to act, whatever that it's, you know, a sales presentation, compel to buy, a motivational presentation, compel to participate, or a simple information presentation, compel to understand. It's all about bringing people to that next level.
So with design, so just as a place to jump in, because we kind of talked DataViz earlier, we can talk about an audience interpreting a DataViz slide that is, I'll just say, professionally designed, somebody that understands like how to make a point out of data, and one that is not. I mean, this is like a huge audience win or lose scenario.
Yeah. And I just spent the whole day training people on how to do this. And it's a big one. I mean, the people I'm working with are media analysts. And so they're constantly dealing with, media advertising numbers and marketing numbers and everything. And you know, that's really the whole ball game, you know, for them in terms of getting a client, retaining a client, and other cases, some, you know, in other DataViz situations, maybe avoiding a lawsuit. But the, you know, the biggest problem with DataViz and presentation is that the story is just so often buried. Like, the numbers are there, but they're buried under bad data design where you can't, you just see a chart and you don't realize what's important and what's not important. You don't see the real story of the numbers. And depending on the audience and the situation, that could mean you're not getting your investment. You're not getting, the angel investor to invest, or you're not getting the person to, back your product or buy your services. And again, it's just a complete presentation failure.
Indeed. What I ask for every slide. Sometimes when I'm doing a makeover, for example, I'll ask my client to walk me through all of the slides. And for every slide, what is the key insight for this chart? And like you said, Nolan, it's often buried. If they insist on having that silly chart there and not really calling it out in an effective way, I will put the insight in the headline. So if it's, you know, sales, you know what I mean.
Oh, yeah, you got to make, you got to somewhere have a focal point.
Got to get it in there. And it's not pretty again, but it, I guess you could say it's a well-designed presentation in that the insight is made clear.
So what about just like when one of our clients is presenting to their clients, how about just credibility in terms of, you know, an organization showing that that they put the energy and time into everything that they do, that they're not, you know, they're all buttoned up, that their logo looks great, their branding looks great, their offices look great, they hire good people and their presentations. I mean, it does give you a sense of legitimacy, I think.
I agree. I think it does. You throw something together, just printing out the presentation as a handout, to me, that's sloppy. And oh, yeah. Is that what you're talking about from a credibility?
Well, everything. It's back to, you know, companies spend all this money on all sorts of things. And then if at the last minute you just throw some bad PowerPoint up, it's like, ugh. Mm-hmm. It's like this company isn't serious, you know, about the messaging.
Okay, so I went a slightly different train of thought when you thought about that. And it wasn't about the company spending the money. But if you're a paid presenter, personal opinions again, you should present at a better visual level and messaging level than the internal people you're presenting to. You should look like you earned your money because you're being paid to do this.
That makes sense.
You know, you should be, you know, you, and that's an investment of time and resources into the presentation, as well as investing time into crafting the actual message. Because I've heard some great presenters and their slides are horrible. I mean, it's like a distraction up there to the point of like, you know, we'd do better just to turn the slides off and let the guy talk. Mm-hmm. He's not really talking anything going back here, or it's, you know, we just did some financial stuff. It was just, again, wasn't data viz. It was just a lot of numbers thrown on the slide and the guy used it as his prompts for what to talk about. Again, that's where I went to when you said credibility and, you know, paid presenter, look like you earned it.
Well, I think that makes sense. So when I work with my presenters to have presentation as flow of content, that the audience can track, I do that so that they can introduce a topic, build needed information, a solid close. Troy, You're, I think, alluding to this. Do you feel this is a part of good design for the audience?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the audience has to, a presentation should support a message. Sometimes things we do, the presentation is the message. But, you know, if it's not really put together to support the talk, it kind of comes a distraction or, and that could be just because the wrong information's up there, you know, at the supporting, or it might be just the fact that it's just kind of stuff up there that's not even pertinent to what's being talked about a lot of times. I have a hard time with the presenter that has a topic and then they have like 9 paragraphs of additional content that doesn't relate to the previous topic, but they're keeping the slide up because they couldn't think of what to do for a new slide. Like, you know, just go to a logo or something. You know, you're not really supporting anything here. Conclusion, we are in for the win. With good presentation design, everybody wins. Clients and other designers and the audience, everybody wins. So, you know, really thank you for being a part of the conversation about design, presentation design, and where we can do good in those fields. I think we could have gone in many, many directions and kept going here for a long time. We could have taken each one of these little subcategories and made them into probably an hour long conversation. But thanks for the overview. Hopefully everybody gets something out of this. I had a ton of fun. I made a lot of notes. I'm going to be testing Layer Comp Export, Nolan. And let's move on to some pro and tech tips.
I'll go first. Pro and tech tips. I discovered an amazing new little app that I have fallen in love with called Icon Jar. You can get it at is it iconjar.io or is it get, no, actually I think it's geticonjar. Now I need to
Checking.
All right. Well, we'll put it in the notes, but if you Google iconjar, you'll find it. It's a, in a sense, one trick pony, app. It just does one thing. It manages your icons. And it'll take icons in various different formats, SVG, PNG, a few other formats. But I mean, I say one trick pony, but within it, it organizes them amazingly. It imports them incredibly. You can export, you can open icons within it and edit them. And so I've started now all my icons. I'm moving away from keeping them in PowerPoint files and I'm organizing them in iconjar as SVGs. So anytime I use an icon, I download it as SVG, throw it in there. It creates its own database. It puts them in its own place. And then whenever I need an icon, I go there and I just drag and drop it right into PowerPoint. And it's incredible. The only negative is that it is Mac only.
Oh, that's what it was. Okay.
There is a competitor.
Right.
And do you know the name of the competitor?
It's I've got it loaded on my other computer because I was so excited after you showed me this, that I did download it. I cannot remember it.
All right. So we'll put it in the speaker notes, but there isn't a competitor that I have not played around with, which is cross-platform. But if you're on a Mac, iconjar is just a beautifully, beautifully designed program. I'm just really impressed with it.
Awesome. Sandy, pro or tech tip this week?
Okay. Well, this is kind of an in-process tech tip. When we were at Summit, of course, I get so attracted to the new and shiny things. The Microsoft Surface headphones are absolutely gorgeous, and I could not.
Did you get some?
I did. And it's we got a little bit of a discount. It wasn't discounted as heavily as say the software was for us, but it was it was a nice little discount. So I bought them
because they're not cheap, right?
They're not. No, I think they retail.
They make Bose look economical.
Yeah, they do. And so speaking of Bose, I haven't completely fallen in love with them yet. They work wonderfully with my Galaxy Note 8 and I can go running and they are beautiful. Noise canceling isn't as strong as Bose. But it's fine. It's fine for me. I have problems using it with my online meeting software. It's inconsistent. So I don't know. I'm sure it's user error. I haven't figured that out yet, but I really do like them. So far,
They're really elegant. But now these are the larger over the ear ones. You said you went running. I mean, these are.
Yeah. No, I look.
They're not little earbuds. Like, these are like. No, but I mean, they're. Yeah. The Bluetooth on them was really cool because you can connect to multiple devices right. I have never actually seen them until we were there at the Microsoft store. And I was tempted.
I'm pleased with them. I have not mastered them yet. So I can't make a 100% recommendation, but I think it's usable.
You got a shiny new toy to play with. Indeed, wow.
Yes. How about you, Troy?
I'm going to go with like a really small one. And it's kind of like those things you have in your bag that you don't realize how many people like need it or want it or appreciate it. So last week, somebody needed to charge their phone. And when I'm at my events, I have this, it's like a USB multi-adapter charging cable. I don't know how else to explain it. So, you know, it's a standard USB on one end and the other end, it fans out to be five or six different plugs. So, you know, it's got the USB-C for like the Galaxies. It has the Apple, flat one. It's got the mini, or the micro or whatever you call it, USB, you know, it's got like five different heads on it, but they're for charging only. They don't do data transfer. So you can't sync your phone or use it to connect to a hard drive. I mean, they're like $10 and I always bring it out with me and somebody came up and needed to charge their phone. And I was like, oh yeah, just plug it in right there. And they went, this is the greatest thing in the world. So when I set up, it's not plugged into my computer. I have an external power block and I power my USB light because I'm working in the dark area. I have my charging cable there and I usually have a couple other things. So I just let somebody use it. And I thought I would share that as a little pro tip to add to your travel. Actually at our house, now that I'm thinking about it, the downstairs area, little countertop and the computer and everything's there. We have two of these plugged in. So anybody that's coming over, they can just walk over and plug in their phone or whatever they got to charge it up. So You guys seen these? I'll throw a link in there.
Yeah, I think I saw it at Summit.
Very simple, very cheap, very economical, very much needed because we live in a battery recharge world. Yes, we do. This is Troy from TLC Creative Services, professional design agency, and we will take care of all of your PowerPoint needs. We have a website, we have a Facebook page, we have lots of places to find us. Thanks for joining us this week.
This is Nolan from Nolan Hames Creative. Check out my blog, presentyourstory.com. You can subscribe for lots of free downloads and goodies. And if your organization is looking for on-site training and data visualization or presentation, give me a call.
And this is Sandy Johnson with Presentation Wiz. You can visit my website and blog at presentationwiz.biz, the Presentation Guild at presentationguild.org. And I'm also on LinkedIn as Sandra Johnson, PowerPoint MVP, and on Twitter as PPTWiz. And just a reminder to rate, review, and subscribe.
For episode show notes, links, and more from this episode, visit us at our website, www.thepresentationpodcast.com. The Presentation Podcast is produced by TLC Creative Services, Inc. You can contact us with episode suggestions, questions for our hosts, or comments through our website. Subscribe at the iTunes Store or at our website for additional options. If you like the podcast, rate us on iTunes. Stars and reviews are greatly appreciated. Look for new episodes the first and third Tuesday of each month.